Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, January 22nd, 2016. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. And how are you doing, Dave?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Awesome. And thanks for coming on. It's always great to have you here. Also, always great to have John Martellaro. How are you doing?
So good.
I'm glad to hear it. When you guys are doing well, I'm doing well too. And as long as I have you here, John, you always have interesting insight into Apple. And before we started recording, you were talking a little bit, not about what you're planning or expecting to see from Apple this year, but what you think may not be coming. And I just thought that was really kind of interesting. So let's dive into that.
Apple has a new Apple Watch out, and they've got a new iPad Pro, and they've got a new 4K iMac. And so the question is 2016 a consolidation year, or is it a bring out exciting new unexpected product year? And I'm kind of getting the feeling that it's sort of a consolidation year. So I don't see anything brilliant, unexpected, exciting, except what we're going to talk about in part two of the show. And so in terms of consolidation, one specter that I was thinking about the other day is that the next version of iTunes would be iTunes 13. Mm-hmm. And I already wrote that iTunes 12 was Apple's worst software ever and should be withdrawn from the market. Yay, they didn't listen. And everybody that I've interviewed on Background Mode so far thinks iTunes 12 is terrible.
John, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second because you mm-hmm. deserve a plug. Listeners, if you haven't started checking out Background Mode yet, totally do it. John is doing some amazing interviews with people that you may be familiar with and some that you may not. Just really awesome, wonderful interviews. So I'll make sure there's a link to John's podcast in the show notes. Okay, carry on, John.
Cool. So there's been so much momentum and so much professional discussion about the future of iTunes and the fact that Apple's coming up on iTunes 13. It seems like it's the right time for Apple to, after maybe a couple years of work, to sort of revamp iTunes. I know there's differing opinions about this. You know, I've talked to Kelly Guman, I've talked to Kirk McElhern, the iTunes guy, I've talked to Glenn Fleischman. They all agree that the user interface is borked, whether it needs to be factored into three different applications, purchasing, playback, and syncing remains to be seen, but something has to happen. The feeling in the community is that the marketing people have taken control, that it's a vast engine to support Apple's agenda and music and sales, and that the simple pleasures of buying and streaming music and managing your music and syncing your devices, assuming you do it with your Mac, is sort of out of control. And so one of the things I think Apple will do during 2016 is consolidate that in some fashion. Dave.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you say consolidate, you mean split. Because it is consolidated.
What I meant was consolidate their thinking about how to handle the user experience with what may be called music instead of iTunes 13. And how it just exactly how it's going to handle your affairs is not clear yet. There are arguments on both sides whether it should be factored, because if the playback experience is hard to separate from the discovery and the purchase experience. And so Apple would probably be reluctant to split those up.
You wouldn't want to split those up on the Mac, right? On the phone, it makes sense, right? Because it's a very, single task sort of at a time sort of device, right? And right. It can do – I understand that phone can multitask. I just mean that in terms of a user – experience, you're doing one thing at a time. You don't have multiple windows open on the phone. You know, on the iPad with split view, you do. It's a different thing, but even then, it makes sense to have it as multiple apps. Here,
I'd like to see multiple apps personally.
Well, I don't know that we want that on the Mac. It makes more sense to me to bounce, to have apps that serve multiple functions on the Mac. And buying a song and listening to it inside the same app makes sense, on the Mac. I don't want to have to jump.
It's part of the theme of your computer is in charge of making recommendations. So you're helpless to figure out where to go eat, so you need recommendations. You're helpless what songs to figure out you want, so you need recommendations. Well,
I mean, even if I know exactly what I want to buy it. Hand. I want to buy it and play it immediately. I don't want to have to buy it and launch a different app to play it. And actually, that experience on iOS is even a little weird, although Apple Music sort of mitigates that entirely, which is good. Where I disagree is that movies need to be in a separate app and TV shows need to be in a separate app. I think iTunes as a media player is awesome. It really I really do. And
except for the user interface, which is so confusing and it has so many different tabs and options and the presentation of your options and so on.
It's true. I kind of have it in old mode. I use the playlist view for my music with the sidebar active. Right?
Yeah, so do I.
Yep. But I don't know if that's just because it's what I learned first. But it certainly seems to make more sense to me to be able to see my playlists and that sort of thing. So that I'm with you there, but I think it needs to stay consolidated, and I hope that in 2016 Apple keeps it that way with one notable exception, and that is syncing. I do not need my sync to my device to happen inside iTunes. In fact, it's less and less relevant to iTunes these days because really all it's doing is backing up my phone and maybe syncing some data, but the data that it syncs, I'm not syncing music. That happens over the cloud. I'm not syncing contacts. I'm not syncing calendars, right? It initially made sense to have all that inside iTunes because you were syncing your music to an iPod, right? And now that paradigm doesn't really – I mean, it exists, but it's not the majority. And in fact, I tend to use iMazing to do my backing up and device management far more than I do iTunes because it's more powerful in that regard and it's less clunky. And, a lot of times the syncing thing becomes this modal thing where it sort of blocks you from doing the other things you'd want to do in iTunes. And I don't want to be blocked. I want to, keep playing my movie or my music or whatever it is. So I'm hoping Apple lets iTunes kind of continue to evolve on its current path and with perhaps a revamped UI, but
there's plenty of room for brilliance in the user interface of iTunes that has left been untapped.
But let's sync out. Go back to iSync. That was a good idea. Let's do that again.
I agree with you on that, Dave. All right. Now, we could go on and on about iTunes, but John, I know there are other things that are on your mind. So pick something else and tell me about that now.
I think there will be an iPad Air 3 with an Apple 9X processor in it. We're not ready for the next generation system on a chip yet. So instead I'll have an A9X instead of an A8X. But what's the gate factor? Well, you couldn't come out with the iPad Air 3 until, assuming it's going to support the Apple Pencil, and I think it will. I think all the future iPad Airs and Pros will support the Pencil. So if it does that, then Apple has to wait until this mystery of why the Apple Pencil is in such short supply is solved. It's going to be a fascinating story once the story is told. But as soon as Apple Pencils are in plentiful supply, and as soon as you... So this is waiting for signs. This is Longmire's waiting for signs. When you can walk into an Apple store and you see 30 Apple Pencils hanging on the rack, then you know the iPad Air 3 is imminent.
I think that's a very interesting theory. And I agree with you that at some point Apple is going to extend Apple Pencil support to other iPad models. But I find it interesting that that is your indicator that the iPad Air 3 will be on the way.
The other thing that I'm wondering about continuously, because I have one, is the Mac Pro. And there are signs that Apple may be warming up to the idea. Well, if they warmed up to it, they warmed up to it years ago. But there are signs that a revamped Mac Pro will be coming out. There's some engineering electronics issues that limit the current Mac Pro that needed to be worked out. Expandability options. There's new Xeon processors. I think Apple was waiting to see how the market went, how the sales went, how the professionals reacted to the expandability, and waiting to tap demand. Because if they had come out with a Mac Pro 2 1 year later, say summer of 14, people would have yawned and said, you know, it was amazing, it was cool in 13, I bought one. It's not a big enough increment. You don't have to, it's not a consumer product, so you don't have to upgrade it every year for the consumers. And the question is, how long do you wait and what engineering issues do you have to solve? And I think it's going to come to a head in the summer of 2016, 3 years after the original iPro, Mac Pro. So what we'll have is we'll have a machine that'll be a bit more refined, of course, a lot faster, perhaps some attention to ports and expandability. And it'll be a machine that people will go, you know, hey, my Mac Pro is 3 years old. I could really use a new one. And so they'll have this continued interest by professionals, what professionals haven't left the family and gone over to Linux and other products and the faster hardware on other machines, PCs. And so there'll
How many of those are left, though, John?
Yeah, I think that's the question. I think Apple's been monitoring for the last couple years to see how it goes. Yeah.
Yeah, because I you know, more and more people that I talk to say, well, yeah, then, you know, the new / current Mac Pro is cool. But, you know, for what I do, really, an iMac is what I need.
Think what Apple could do after 3 years. I mean,
I know what they could do.
The machine was designed 4 years ago.
Yeah, no, I know. But do they have? Is there a demand for a machine like that? I think we need to acknowledge, but split the demand of the emotional desire for that machine versus the practical desire, right?
Well, one of the things that's commonly discussed with regard to the Mac Pro is something called the Halo concept. General Motors has its Halo car, the Corvette. Other manufacturers have their Halo cars that sort of set the tone and introduce the latest and greatest technology and keep people salivating. So I don't see big demand as a driver so much as the ability to have a flagship product. Of course, when you do that, you have to pay attention to the display that you marry it to. And so that brings up the question of this aging, decrepit Thunderbolt 27-inch display to marry with it. And we don't know where Apple's going with displays, whether if they bow out of the display market altogether and just cancel that product. Then they're in the situation where they'd have to say, okay, we got this brand new 2016 Mac Pro, but you should go out and buy a Hewlett-Packard monitor to marry with it. So there's that too. It's all very sticky.
Yes, it is. All right, so before we hop topics, I want to go back to one thing you said earlier, John, which was consolidation. So I'm curious, do you think that means that Apple is going to start cutting products out of, say, like the laptop line?
I think there's going to be some big changes in the MacBook line altogether. I think the MacBook is going to become the premier technology product because it's the number one selling MacBook from what I've read. And so I think we're going to see faster processors in the MacBook in 2016 to really put it on good footing with speed. I think we're going to see maybe a second MacBook with a 14-inch display instead of a 12-inch display for people who need something slightly larger but still incredibly thin and light to carry around. I think we're going to see some evolution of the MacBook Air. I think maybe the 11-inch might be dropped. I think it might become much less expensive and focused on education because Apple's got a problem in the education market with expensive MacBooks compared to Chromebooks. And they need an entry-level device for kids and something that's not real expensive. I expect to see the MacBook Air become, you know, still a premium product, but at the very bottom of the line. Well, the MacBook starts to get bigger displays and pushes the limits of the technology.
Wait a minute. You think that the MacBook Air, that the MacBook is going to leapfrog the MacBook Air in yes. terms of its capabilities?
Yes, but not just processor, but in terms of battery profile and USB-C options and all the advanced technologies. I think it's Apple's platform for next generation technologies.
I don't disagree with that, but do you think the Air, that they're actually going to swap the two? I mean, because right now the way Apple presents it is, you know, MacBook is kind of on the low end, and then you've got the Air in the middle, sort of, mm-hmm. and then MacBook Pro.
I think that's going to swap.
You do? Do you? And you don't think the Air is just going to go away?
No, because it's never had a Retina display, and it never will, and that's an expensive add-on, and there's no point in making the MacBook Air more expensive when you can leave it non-Retina and make it less expensive through economies of scale and history of production and point it at the education market as an entry-level Mac and let the MacBook itself, which is a very exotic, you know, thin, high-technology battery profile inside, all the latest and greatest USB-C, I think with its popularity and the sales, I think that's going to become, you know, the MacBook to have.
I don't disagree with you. And price wise, you're right. I mean, it's that way now, right? A MacBook starts at $1,299, right? For the low end one, and you can get a MacBook Air, an 11-inch Air, starts at $899.
Yeah, I think that'll go down to $599 or something like that. Maybe better, maybe $550. Like I said, Apple's got to have a lower cost MacBook, and the MacBook Air without a Retina display is the perfect entry-level machine to point at education and beginners.
Yeah, you're right about that. I don't disagree with you there. Do you think that they will consolidate the ports on the MacBook Air into all USB-C?
No, because as an entry-level machine, it's got to have more flexibility for education and users who don't want to have to go out and replace all their connectors and peripherals.
I think you're wrong on that point. I don't think Apple gives two hoots about that.
You know, I
would cost money. And you got a product, it's fixed, it's well designed, it's in production. Why fiddle with it and add cost when what you're trying to do is decrease the cost?
It's not that significant of a cost, though. I mean, I get that it is because it's R&D time and you know, their whole iterative design thing, but I'm not buying it. Here's this thing that looks like this thing you bought 4 years ago, right? No, that's not Apple's way.
No, it's not.
No, I think it gets retooled. I agree with everything else you've said, and I came into this call not disagreeing with that, for lack of a better term. And but that I disagree with. If they're going to do this, they're going to retool it and make it the lower priced cousin kind of thing.
We'll just have to agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah,
I would like to see Apple put USB-C on the Air for the education market or just in general. But for the education market, it would be nice if they would bundle USB-C to USB 2 or 3 adapter with it. But of course, that's not going to happen.
No.
Hey, we are so close to out of time, but there's another topic I really wanted to get your opinions on real quick. And that's this new hire that Apple has. So they just hired a man named Doug Bowman, and he came from Virginia Tech, and he is considered to be one of the country's top experts in virtual reality. And so I'm curious what you guys think of that.
I'll tell you where I think this is going, and I think it's amazing that all three of us had the same thought independently of each other. I saw an article about a year ago about a next generation business jet, and instead of having windows with, you know, rectangular openings and glass, it had LCD panel displays along the edges. And of course, there's cameras on the airplane, and you're displaying in a panoramic view the entire outside. It's like you're floating above the planet with these LCD displays. And that solves engineering problems of having breaks in the monocoque shell and structural issues and blowing out windows and the lack of visibility because you have to peer through this little 15-inch hole. And you've got this marvelous LCD display that kind of spans around the waist or the belt line of the interior of the cabin. So I was thinking the other day, wouldn't it be cool because of all the visibility problems we have? You know, the sleeker the car is, the harder it is to see outside. And if you could have the inside of your Apple car to be displays instead of glass, you could solve some structural problems. You could solve some visibility problems. You could solve some safety problems with, you know, the ability to see what's going on in addition to the radar sensors or sonar sensors that help the vehicle avoid collisions. And it would just be an awesome visual experience in an Apple car to have interior displays. Because that's not going to be cheap, but it could be amazing.
All right. So I don't want to be attached to that theory anymore.
This isn't the way I was visualizing this theory.
Pre-show, when we talked about this, John said, hey, what if this VR hire is not about games? And we really didn't go further than that. And we all said, yeah, actually, that in a way that makes sense. I had no idea about this path, and I totally disagree because I think it makes no sense when you think of the Apple car as an autonomous driving vehicle, right? You don't need all this extra visibility. None of that matters.
Oh, but you want it. You want to float along and see the sights.
Yeah.
You don't want to feel like you're in a container, you know, out of control. In fact, in an autonomous car, being in control, you want to have more visibility. It's a psychological crutch to say, I see what's going on. I'm monitoring the situation.
Yeah. I don't know. Actually, and now I even think it's probably about games on the Apple TV. I think it's pretty obvious, in fact.
Well, you know, I just, I'm full of ideas.
No, it's a good idea. I think we're going to see tech like that in an Apple car. I do.
Even if it's just the rear window.
Yeah, right. Because that's where the problems are the worst. That's right. Yeah. Or the rear view mirror is no longer a mirror, right? It's a camera view that gives you something that tells your mind what it is you want to see without being obstructed, without dealing with all the obstructions of the things between you and the outside.
A lot of stuff to be done there.
Yeah. But I really think that this is more about Apple TV and that being a gaming platform.
Well, you know me, I'm a science fiction guy. I like to think way ahead. I'm never happy with conventional ideas.
Yeah, and I'm kind of down the middle on this. I'm thinking augmented reality, so glass windshields, but projected images onto the glass to help with driving.
Heads up.
Oh, yes.
So heads up display.
Yep.
And then gaming for Apple TV.
Yeah. Yep, I'll go with that.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up.
Oh, was this fun or what?
It's always fun when I have you guys on, like every single time. Totally. John, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
Even if your idea of taking windows out of the car is wrong.
Well, we'll start with the rear window.
All right, baby steps. Dave, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, my pleasure. This is a fun one.
Yes, totally. Listeners, thank you for joining us yet again. We'll see everyone on Monday.